Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
Recorded live from the lobby of the Lion Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C.
Good afternoon, and Happy New Year. This is Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Lion Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. You are listening to the Junctional Thinking Podcast, and I am your host, Pierre Vigilance. Junctional thinking is this sort of five skills, behaviors, and ideals that people who are in any impact-related sector need to have in order to be functional at the intersections that they will be dealing with because they're doing social impact work. So be that health, community development, novel finance, nonprofit management, doesn't matter what the space is, there are five skills, behaviors, and ideals that make you a great junctional thinker. And those are to be a perpetual learner, to be an effective listener, to not be afraid of leadership, to be able to practice and effectively be engaged in patience, and also to then be a great partner and be about going the distance with people. And so I'm really privileged to be able to invite a number of great people to join me in the studio to talk about their own career journeys and how it is that they, through their work, are functional at the junction, that intersection of a whole bunch of different inputs that makes them really great at their work and able to inspire others to do the same. So today, I am really happy to be joined by an old friend, Glenn Ogilvy, who is the CEO of the Center for Nonprofit Advancement here in Washington, D.C. He has been in that position for double-digit years, we will say now, 11 years in that role, and has definitely been an influencer in the nonprofit space here in Washington, D.C. for a while, until we're going to be talking to him today. So thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Pierre. Thank you for having me. I'm really looking forward to this conversation.
So I'm part of that. So there's for those of you, people know us in different ways. So we are both members of a very illustrious group called the Tenacious Group, Leadership Greater Washington, Class of 2010, which this year turns 10, of course. And so shout out to Leadership Greater Washington and all of our classmates who are out there, some of whom will be also joining me on the show over the next few months.
Tenacious,
and we'll be celebrating that, because I don't think there's been any other class that was quite like ours. It's like,
I don't think so.
No, it's frankly. Yeah, there was this, we broke the mold after that, and I'm sure there'll be a lot of trash talking as a result of that comment. But we have also had the pleasure of being able to teach together at the GW School of Public Health in the leadership course. He's been a person who's come into the classroom as a speaker and has also then helped us teach the class, so we appreciate him in that regard. But part of the reason for us being able to engage in him in all these ways is because he's very open about his own background and how he got to the place where he is now. So if you want to sort of, for listeners who are thinking about different things, how does one become the CEO for the Center for Nonprofit Advancement? It's not a straight line.
Sure.
Talk a little bit about growing up in New York, you know, family background and stuff like that.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And again, thank you for having me. You're right. So getting to this point, I think, another ode to the Tenacious 10 requires a lot of tenacity,
right?
Lots of ambition. And some of the five sort of areas in the junction that you mentioned, that sort of being a great partner, having patience, and being willing to continuously learn. So for me, growing up in New York on Staten Island, two parents, Jamaica and the West Indies.
Yes, sir.
Lots of focus on education, on ambition, self-esteem, respect, and all of those things that you want to instill into your young people.
Right.
That led me to schooling, Catholic and private schooling, also a little bit of public school experience. And from New York, you know, I think a lot of the diversity experience was accomplished being bused, if you would, to Catholic school and private school, being one of one in almost every room. One of five African Americans at a high school, you know, freshman to senior, full population, five African Americans. So you really get an opportunity to learn yourself and learn others from other communities and cultures, which I think has helped me along the way. I think the ambition happens when you push yourself into a position that you may not think you're qualified for, but you believe right. you can figure out.
Right.
And spending those long nights and early mornings figuring it out. So for me, my experience has been a circle, direct service nonprofits on the national scale, mm-hmm. The association, serving nonprofits, building their capacity, over 800 organizations, different personalities, missions, etc. And in philanthropy, serving as program officer, so being a grant maker. So I've had all these different roles, and I think the humility of wanting to learn, being of service, so that servant leadership, doing what you say you're going to do and constantly pushing yourself to learn more and get into what are currently uncomfortable situations and circumstances until they become comfortable.
Right.
And the norm has helped me a lot. So I'm excited about that.
So let's just go, let's take it back to those days in Staten Island, mm-hmm. being bused to a school where you were one of so few. Mm-hmm. And fast forward then a number of years, I won't say how many, but fast forward a number of years to walking into rooms now where you may still be one of very few.
Sure.
What are the things that you remember grasping and holding on to from that journey, leaving your neighborhood where you blended right in, mm-hmm. to going into a school environment where you didn't, but doing that on a regular basis now with your work? Because I mean, sort of the number of black male executives, something that's often talked about as being a very low number.
Sure.
Even here in Washington, D.C. And so how does your experience growing up doing that impact or influence how you deal with that regularly as an adult and as an executive?
You know, one of the common threads there to respond to that is authenticity for me. So being able to be authentic in those spaces. Mm-hmm. And I think as a young person, young people are brutally honest in what they're thinking. There's no beating around the bush of what they are wondering about you. So for me as a young person, it was everything from the hair and the skin and, you know, how do you do that?
Sort of, I see, yes.
Very clear, very direct. And those conversations helped me to become even more comfortable in my skin, mm-hmm. And allowed me to be more authentic in those spaces. And that authenticity, I think, has carried with me. And helps me in the spaces I'm in now, which in some cases I may also be one of one.
Right.
And I think that's very important. I also think cultural competency is important as well, and treating everyone fairly and giving everyone a clean slate when you meet them, not responding to them in a way that the last person who looked like that, you know, might have caused
right.
you to respond
or, right.
or bringing that feeling. So every day is a new day. Every person is a new person, and we start at 100% and hope that the individuals and the relationships we're building can maintain that and not find themselves at a lower percentage given the way they have treated you or engaged with you.
Or the way they've been acculturated to seeing you without ever even meeting
That's
you
exactly
or anybody
right.
like you.
That's exactly right.
Okay. I hear you. So, some interesting, and it's the same even with the habits piece around what we do on a daily basis. I was watching, I'm not sure if you've seen it on Netflix, there's this thing called Game Changers.
Sure.
One of my former students just, actually I shouldn't call them that, one of our graduates out there as a professional himself now advised me to take a look at this thing. And we were talking about the meat industry versus, you know, the plant-based industry and sort of who's to gain, if you will, and how much we're influenced to, you know, eat animal-based protein versus something else. Now, and that input, what that learning is something that has been given to us by commercials and corporations, etc. But you work with a bunch of different organizations who are out there in the social service space, mm-hmm. who have also been fed a particular way for a long time, right? By government funding, particular ways of thinking about and doing things. Is there a similar thread there with respect to things that nonprofits have continually been fed that you'd wish for them to now switch to a plant-based diet, switch away from the meat, if you will? Is there some similar stuff that you're seeing in that space?
Interesting. So as soon as you mentioned the word fed, you made me think about revenue, which just shows you how my
there
mind works, right?
There you go, right? And, that's what I mean. I mean, it's like the government. I think government right. and nonprofit. I think grant, right?
So I think from a philanthropic standpoint, in the way in which direct service organizations, the food, the shelter, housing, etc.,
right,
connect with philanthropy, the individuals who provide support for them to activate and provide those services, is a great place to sort of unpack this.
Okay.
And what I see is, for a long time, it was a relationship that suggested we have to be beholding to philanthropy, do what they say, don't ask too many questions,
right,
hope that they provide us the support so we can continue.
Right, right.
The evolution has become more of a partnership.
Okay.
The encouraging and understanding that it is a level relationship, it's an investment into the entity or organization, the nonprofit.
Okay.
And the nonprofit is providing a return on that investment, which is the social benefit,
okay,
or community strengthening, whatever the mission might be.
Right.
So it is an opportunity for the philanthropic side to partner with the direct service side.
Rather than what it was looked at before, which was maybe just a one way, I'm benevolently giving you or bestowing these funds upon you, and in return, I don't really expect too much,
right,
and you, the organization, may not be looking to give me too much.
Yep, and it might be a one-shot deal, and we hope it happens again.
Right.
Now we're very intentional in the data that we're sharing, the
right.
history, the benefit to the foundation or government agency or philanthropic support system, that this is the right way
right.
for you to engage and support the community.
So measuring the outcomes, if you is becoming more important. So how does that then change? Because that changes things from both perspectives.
Mm-hmm.
That changes things from the philanthropic perspective. The giver of the funds is now looking for certain things, and the recipient, the organizations, have to be prepared to provide some not only service,
sure.
but also reporting back on that service.
That's right.
How have you seen that this shift change what is required of leadership in, or not even necessarily leadership, functional individuals in the nonprofit organizations? What changes in skills have they had to have mm-hmm. in order to be able to provide that information back to the funder?
Sure. So it's about capacity
okay.
and ensuring that you have the right number of people with the right level of expertise
yes.
to deliver on that. As we suggest, so to bring and demonstrate and share that return on investment. So it's all about capacity. And I will say that the nonprofit sector is the most comprehensive, complex space for one to work in, given the need for cross-training and experience across a continuum beyond whatever your title might be.
Right.
So the program director is also has an understanding of finance, has an understanding of measures, great written oral communication. There's just a lot of stuff
right.
that each individual position needs to be aware of to function strong. So it requires leadership to hire in the right capacity to strengthen team members according to a changing environment.
Yes.
For funding purposes and just to be effective and to hold people accountable
right.
In a way that is just as professional as the sector is and continues to challenge everyone to do more.
Absolutely. Okay, the voice you've been hearing is that of Glenn Ogilvie, CEO of the Center for Nonprofit Advancement here in Washington, D.C. You're listening to the Junctional Thinking Podcast, broadcasting live from Full Service Radio here in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. And that comment that you just made about the skills that people need to have as being more than just one, you know, in the leadership course that we taught together, we talk about verticals versus horizontals
sure.
as skills, right? And, you know, you may have gone to school for a certain thing, or you may have been really passionate or curious about a particular thing and got some expertise in that, and that would be your vertical. But your horizontal skill game needed to be big, too. You needed to be good. And so you talk about a couple of specific things you just mentioned. They need to be versed in finance. They need to be versed in some sort of resource management, et cetera. Some would say, and I'd have some young professionals say, well, look, they didn't teach me that stuff in school. So, and then this job application says that I need to have experience doing it in order to get this job. Mm-hmm. They're caught between two hard places, right? So how do you advise, you know, early career professionals who are trying to level up in this junctional thinking sort of way that we just described without using those terms?
Sure.
To be able to be functional in these multiple different ways.
Yeah, that's a really good point. So I think that there's always been this challenge around the four-year, you know, undergraduate study.
Yeah.
And then you've got that great degree and you're looking for a job and mm-hmm. they say, well, what experience do you have? And you say, well, I have had no time to get experience.
Right.
I was focusing on getting this great piece of document that I'm just sharing with you. But what we realize is the best way to test some of what you're getting in the classroom and build experience and skills is volunteerism.
Good, okay.
Structured, skill-based volunteerism,
mm-hmm.
Where you are in an organization and you're helping in the finance department or you're helping in the resource development department or you're shadowing the CEO or COO. That helps you bring skills and build skills that coincide with what you're learning that you can demonstrate when you're done with that degree. To a prospective employer to get in the door. There's often, not always, a conversation around unpaid versus paid volunteer opportunities.
Right.
And students that I've engaged with tend to want to shy away from unpaid.
Right.
My argument has been that the payment is the experience. The payment is that person who's willing to answer the phone and give you a reference when you're done.
Yeah.
And the opportunity sort to test and make mistakes and fully hone the skills that you intend to shoot and go forward with. So I encourage people to do unpaid. I encourage folks to focus on volunteerism at any level, just to get to know another sector or subsector better. And that's one great way to build those skills and get
right,
that experience.
Right. As you think back, you know, over your career, and you think about some of the people who were really influential to you and sort of made you think about something differently or do something differently. Are there any particular people or types of people that come to mind if you don't have a particular person to speak to?
Sure. And let me back up on the volunteerism. Unpaid and paid internships.
Oh, good.
Unpaid is still good for all the reasons I mentioned. Volunteerism is always at no compensation. People. So a lot of people have mentored me and supported me without knowing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's because I would sort of zero in on a particular individual who is in a position that I would aspire to be in.
Okay.
And follow that person.
Right.
I guess young people now call it trolling. I would troll.
is that a good thing?
It's a good thing. I would troll that person. I would keep up with how they're doing. I would see their awards. I would sort of understand the way they're operating their organizations, their speeches.
Let's talk about the limits of trolling
here real quick.
So what are the limits before we release people out there?
To troll freely. Well, I think now with the advancement of social media, you can follow someone and benefit from the way they do things
okay.
and the things they say by just watching their Twitter
good.
Feed.
So that sounds
it's
pretty
a good troll.
That sounds pretty benign. That's
right.
a good troll. Okay.
You can look at their website, look at the annual reports, you can
okay.
be present at events and just kind of aspire like, wow, I love the way he or she
right.
did that.
But what about what not to do?
What not to do? The bulk of my experience in that regard, believe it or not, came from people who led me.
Mm.
Supervisors, executive directors in organizations
right.
where I was at middle management, paying attention and seeing those mistakes. What not to do is sometimes in the Washington Post.
True. But in trolling specifically,
I'm saying trolling
because I'm still in the.
You're still in the troll.
I don't equate trolling with being good. I don't know. But people are like, oh yeah, I'm trolling you.
Right.
And I don't know if I should feel comfortable if someone says that, but I guess there's a limit to appropriate trolling and I'm trying to figure out and help people understand what inappropriate trolling is.
Oh, I got that. So I would say a good way to sort of redirect that is observing. So you're observing the leadership
yes.
of another individual
okay, good.
And you're observing that in all things public and sometimes it is social media. A bad thing about trolling is to believe that observation allows you to know that person enough to meet them and say, how's your daughter doing? This is your first interaction with this person. You only know about their daughter from what you saw while quietly observing.
That might be a little
it's
awkward.
A little, yeah. Mm. So that would be a non-positive. So I think being present is good. Observing what's happening around you. I think leadership is around us every day.
Yes.
I experience leadership in everywhere from a pizza parlor to a Starbucks.
Right.
And it is someone who is not necessarily the manager in some cases, going forward to do something in the best interest of the service
right.
or the entity.
Right.
And those are the types of transferable skills and yeah. things that you can observe in your process.
So it's really about the observation and mm-hmm. paying attention to people and then interacting with, passively interacting with their what they're putting out there.
That's right.
What about the next step of getting to know them potentially? And,
yep.
and how do you sort of get to that? Let me explain why I'm asking that question. This is sort of the front end of it, but I have a lot of people will say to me, well, I had an interview or I met somebody and they said that I should follow up with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I followed up with them that day and I haven't heard back from them. How many times should I da 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 da?
Yeah.
I think some of that's a function of how well you knew them before that introduction. So
sure.
Talk a bit about that.
No, I appreciate that. So I think once you're able to meet someone, follow-up is key. And you may not get the response on the first, second, or third attempt,
mm-hmm.
Largely because that person may be inundated or busy or going through a season within their organization that keeps their head down. You should not take it personally. You should continue to reach out and reach out in different ways. I think if someone tells you to follow up with them, in the moment in which you're with them, they genuinely want to support you, learn more about you in one way or another. So going away quietly doesn't help you
right.
or the individual.
Right.
So there's a polite way to, in our organization, we call it professionally pester. Someone, PP.
Wow.
There's a professional...
Trolling and now professional right? pestering. Oh,
there's a professional pestering, which is polite. And
right.
I think at some point, and it can take 12, in some cases 18 months,
mm.
there's a breakthrough where you see that person and they remember you as the person
yeah.
who's been trying to be in touch
with
them.
Who's been professionally pestering.
That's
them.
Correct. And then they're in that point, they really feel obligated to deliver on what they are so delayed in providing, which is an opportunity to learn and know
right,
you better.
Right, right, right. Okay. This is good. And just the little sidebar I'll say before we take a little break is that this advice is still relevant to the two of us as we sit here at this point in our careers, as it was to us 20 years ago, as it is to people who are 20, 30 years our quote-unquote junior, and even others who were a little further ahead of us, because we're all constantly evolving and learning how to better interact with one another in order to do what we have to do. You've been listening to the Junctional Thinking Podcast, broadcasting live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C., with my guest, Glenn Ogilvie, CEO of the Center for Nonprofit Advancement, and we'll be right back after a short break.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is H-O-V. I used to move snowflakes by the OC. I guess even back then you can call me CEO of the ROC. Ho, fresh out the frying pan and into the fire. I be the music biz number one supplier. Fly it in a piece of paper bearing my name. Got the hottest chick in the game wearing my chain. That's right, ho, ho. Not D2C, but simpler to the letters. No one can do it better. I check chatter like a food inspector. Tony Frick told me, dude, finish your breakfast. So that's what I'ma do, take you back to the dude with the Lexus. Fast forward the juice and the necklace. Let me tell you dudes what I do to protect this. Shoot at you actors like movie directors. Play the movie, dog.
Before I finish, let me just say, did not come here to show out, did not come here to improve you. Because to tell you the truth, when I leave here, I don't care what you think about me. But it hits the fan, brother. But if next year, 10 years, 20 years from now, I'm gonna be able to say that these brothers lie.
Complex. I never claim to have wings on, nigga, I keep my by any means on. Whenever there's a drought, get your umbrellas out, because that's when I brainstorm. You can blame Sean, I ain't invented the game.
We are back. This is Pierre Vigilance, the host of Junctional Thinking, the podcast, broadcasting live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. My guest today is CEO of the Center for Nonprofit Advancement, Glenn Ogilvie, joining me here for show number 26. I have to sort of start plugging that in. Very grateful to be at this point in the show's evolution. And thank you all for listening in and for your support in 2019. So we were just talking a bit about the these practices of trolling and pestering, which both need to be sort of taken with the appropriate level of not too much mashing of the gas, if you will. This is an appropriate level of passive attention being paid to people's feeds, paying attention to what it is that they're putting out there, interacting with that information as appropriate, and then getting to connect with those people in a way that allows them to get to know you, you'd get to know them, and then hopefully build a relationship. And we've been talking in the break a little bit about the conflation that is often done between mentoring versus coaching versus sponsorship. And we're talking about these trolling and pestering, if you will, as opportunities to create relationships with people that might become coaching or mentoring or sponsorship relationships. But what's the difference? I mean, someone says, oh, I'm looking for a mentor, or I am a mentor to someone versus a coach versus a sponsor. What is the difference?
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. And let me underscore for the professional pestering and you know, the trolling or quietly observing. People often find this intersection between their personal self and their professional self,
right,
and the way they would respond or things they would do personally versus professionally. And I think personally, you send someone two emails and they don't respond, it's, you know, forget about them.
Right.
He or she doesn't want to talk to me.
Right.
I don't want to talk to him or her either.
Right.
On the professional side, you might send seven more.
Right.
Because it's not about you.
Right.
It's about the goal.
The goal.
You have
right.
in mind.
Yes.
So losing the feelings, the emotions, and focusing on that goal in a
right.
way that is positive and, you know, continues to follow up is
got
where
you.
I'm going
got
with
you,
that.
Got you, got you.
So mentoring versus coaching versus sponsorship. Mentoring is a good thing, and it's a, in this case, a formal relationship where
right.
someone agrees, I want to mentor you, or I want you to be my mentee.
Mm-hmm.
And I think mentoring would allow someone to meet with you periodically, sometimes over food, or otherwise, to hear how you're doing and maybe to suggest a thing or two, informally, no formal suggestions, but a thing or two, you might want to try X. Coaching, however, in its formal phase is my job is to help you. You're already great. It's almost
right.
like the athletic sort of reference. My job as a coach is to help put you in the right spaces so that you can meet your goal. So I'm pushing you about the skills you need to develop and the things you need to do, when you might need to activate, challenging you to be better coaching. And it's a formal relationship, and maybe we say we're going to have two calls per month for 1 hour, once every 2 weeks, and we'll have our goals listed and we'll talk about how we're doing towards
with those goals. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Sponsorship, I think, is the top of the mountain, the tip. And when someone agrees to sponsor you, formal or informal, what they are saying is, I am willing to put my own reputation, some of my own stock, if you would, on the line to open doors and ensure that you get what you need or get to where you need to go.
Right.
I am calling someone and saying, you really need to give
this
individual an interview.
Yes.
And this is the best person to be on your team. And
yes.
what I'm saying when I sponsor you, I know you're awesome. I know that you are going to add to my reputation and not deplete it or diminish it because you're going to do a great job.
Right.
So we don't often, sponsors are not always present. To get to sponsorship, you may first have the mentor and then that person decides
right.
to coach you and then ultimately sponsor you. So
got you.
You are lending some of yourself when you sponsor someone and putting your own reputation on the line.
Do you think that people understand that?
You know,
understand these differences?
I don't think so.
Right.
And I think in some cases it happens. I don't know about you, but when I was younger and, you know, meeting or dating, if you would, nobody said, do you want to go steady or do you want to be my girlfriend or boyfriend?
Okay.
It just kind of happened
okay.
over time. And
okay.
there was this commitment. And I think sponsorship happens in that way without talking about it in some cases as well. You've just known the person long enough. You've
right.
been consistent and demonstrated your ability to be trusted long enough where they say, I'm going to make a call for you. Don't worry about it.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know if people know because it's not always as formal as we just described it.
And because to some extent there's an organic development that can happen with this. Now, and I don't know, maybe I have this in my own mind. Sometimes people will come to you and say, I'm looking for a mentor.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how people so much say, I'm looking for a coach.
Right.
But they might, or they'll say, they might say, I'm looking for a sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
But they definitely will say, I'm looking for a mentor. But then there's a two-way, there's two directions that that goes. I mean, you asking the question doesn't then automatically mean that you're done with
right.
respect to what it is you need to do. You talk a little bit about, in these relationships, what the expectation is of the mentee.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And I think when someone says to you, I'm looking for a mentor, it can be a little awkward because someone who is organized immediately wants to think, well, how long? How often? Frequency? You want details.
Mm-hmm.
I think a better request is, can I stay in touch with you?
Right.
And allow mentorship to even happen
yes.
on its own.
Yeah.
I think what you want to do to be a good mentee is to be consistent, be present, right? Be on time for what you've said
yes.
you're going to do. All of the same things that you'd want to do to get to know someone better and for them to realize that you are reliable, trustworthy,
right.
and to like you.
Yes.
But oftentimes people don't take, even the mentee might not take the relationship seriously enough, might
right.
cancel 15 minutes before the start time at some location, who knows? But the same things that would turn you off in a relationship that you're building would turn off a mentor.
That's a good way to put it. I like the, so the, it is the sort of similar to the dating thing.
It's,
like they just didn't show, or they gave me 10 minutes notice. Would you continue to pursue that person or try to get to know that person better? Or are they showing you exactly who you are, who they are,
that's
and
right.
you just need to pay attention to that?
And to bring it full circle, you definitely wouldn't sponsor that person.
There you go.
Because you don't know if they're going to do well, do
right.
a good job or not.
Right, right, right. So as we sort of relate some of that to the skills, behaviors, and ideas, the SBIs of junctional thinking, and sort of think a bit more about any of those in particular, you know, be it the perpetual learning piece, the effective listening, not being afraid of leadership, patience and partnerships piece. Patience, I think, is one thing that pops out to me as being something that's really important with respect to any relationship development. What's your take on sort of people coming to you and saying they need something for a particular... So they met you in class. This may have actually
sure.
happened.
Sure.
You taught them for a very short period of time, 10 weeks, once a week.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't really spoken to you much in between. Now they want a letter of recommendation.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure on the that's not coaching because this is a one-off.
Sure.
It's not really mentorship because it's a one-off. It's actually sponsorship
in a way.
But it's coming out of the clear blue sky because that person needs something, right? They didn't really have the patience or the vision necessarily to set that ask up. I feel like that happens to me a fair bit.
Mm-hmm.
Is would you say patience is one of the things that we need to figure out how to exercise best in order to create great relationships?
I think patience is absolutely one of those things. And with that, I would also add timing.
Uh-huh.
Because if I hadn't heard from you in a few years, but you left a lasting impression on me when we did have those 10 weeks together, when you reach out to me as early as you can with as much notice, make it easy for me, one.
Yes.
Two, let me know how you're doing and what has gone on in those years since we last were together.
Mm-hmm.
And then let me know what you need in this letter of recommendation and how you're going to leverage it to get you to that next phase. So there's a new warm-up that needs to occur, which all can occur electronically.
Right.
But walk me down that path and
yeah.
then make it easy for me. So share with me and draw or connect the dots to some of what you did in class that you'd like to come off the
yes.
paper in the recommendation.
Right.
These are the three verticals
yeah.
I'd like, and I believe you can speak to.
Make it easy. So you're making me think, again, I'm back to food.
Mm-hmm.
You're making me think of sort of, you know, we just had Christmas, you had people at the house,
mm-hmm.
et cetera, and you may have had some leftovers, maybe, right? And you may have put some of those leftovers in the freezer. But you can't go home right this second and pull that food out of the freezer and eat it.
That's right.
You have to do something to it to get it ready for you to actually consume it
mm-hmm.
again, right? So I guess what I'm saying is don't let Don't let the relationship freeze.
That's right.
Right? Don't let it take so long. But at the same time, know that if you're bringing someone over for dinner, just having ice cream in the freezer isn't going to be the thing either, right? So it's about having the right stuff at the right time. And, you know, understanding that staying present allows you to know when's the right time and what you need to be bringing, what you need to be doing. All right. All
right. Yeah, and you make me think about how important it is to maintain and feed your network, to have another food reference.
Yes.
Over a period of time and to let stay connected so that you're not only re-engaging when you need something.
Right.
And how you might do that. It is it's a difficult task, but it does support growth and success. I think people need to be in touch and calendar it so you know that you're in touch with certain people, even if it's a two-sentence email.
Right.
At least twice a year or quarterly. Right.
Right. Right.
I think that following someone on social media, periodically liking or retweeting something they said, doesn't count.
Right. Agreed.
Picking up the phone periodically, quarterly or some other frequency, is also helpful.
Yes.
And in a non-intrusive way, trying to get an in-person with that person periodically is also good. And everything I'm saying is stuff that I've experienced. People have done it with me, and it has stood out and impressed me in a way that makes me want to sponsor that individual. It makes me feel comfortable.
And it also, and to take it back to sort of the business end of things and the engagement end of things, it also impacts how people interact with you, your work or your service or your product, because you have a particular experience, like you mentioned, at Starbucks.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why you have that experience is because of a lot of time that's been spent trying to ensure that that experience works a particular way. People will ask me, well, why is there a Starbucks right across the street from another Starbucks? It's because they were getting enough business that if they funneled all those people into one store, the experience would change sufficiently enough for them not to be giving you what they want to be giving you, which is a particular type of exposure and experience. So when you talk about the patient experience that people have in health systems, again, it's a function of, did we stay present with you? Did we listen to you, et cetera? So what kind of advising are you doing for your advisees, mentees, or the people you coach who are nonprofit leaders? Sort of, what have been, as you think of 2019, what did you end up saying to tons of people that, you know, was a piece of advice that kept coming out of your mouth?
Yeah, so most of our advice is around donor engagement, around fundraising. There's a lot of staying connected relative to individual donors, relative to people who we serve, making sure that their service experience was strong. Lots around evaluation and bringing that full circle. For our sector, toward the end of the year is a time for expressing gratitude, the month of November. A time for celebrating cultures throughout December. And obviously a new year means a fresh start.
Right.
New areas of focus, etc. So for us, it really is and has been keeping up with your network in your communications to do that so that everyone knows how well you're doing or what you're doing and is able to stay connected with you.
Okay, good. That connectivity piece is key. So as you look forward into this year and think about what it is that the nonprofit sector is facing in the DMV, the District of Maryland and Virginia, but also sort of nationally, are there any particular things that stand out to you as being sort of what to watch for? I mean, you've already talked a little bit about the change in the relationship between philanthropy and nonprofits, and that seems to have been a change over time, but what are we on the cusp of or looking forward to in this new year and new decade?
Yeah, thank you for asking that. So it is 2020, and I think the thing that we are looking for is loaded, and it's scale. Scaling operations to serve more and to do more. And it's loaded because you can't scale without being efficient. You can't scale without building capacity.
Right.
And you cannot scale without holding people accountable.
Right.
Internally and externally. So scale is loaded. And on the business side, it was often called smart growth.
Right.
But scale is what's necessary because in every mission, in every area, there's an opportunity to do more. We haven't solved any of the challenges of our communities yet. But being smart in that approach, being intentional, and measuring as we go and encouraging more partners to support the work is going to be necessary to get there.
How comfortable do you think, given the complexity of the problems that your organizations deal with, and you are an umbrella organization, Sure. Your members cut across a number of different sectors and types of challenges, from housing and sort of finance, mm-hmm. economic development, health, etc. How comfortable do you think nonprofit practitioners and leaders are in seeking out spaces where they can learn from another sector, if you will? Do you find that all your health nonprofits like to cozy up together, and all your housing nonprofits like to cozy up together, and they don't necessarily do a lot of sort of intersector conversating, mm-hmm. or is that not the case?
Yeah, I think there's lots of cross-mission conversation and support. At the Center for Nonprofit Advancement, we've seen over the years, and there's been some growth around position mates getting together.
Yes.
So we have a CEO network where about a dozen CEOs gets together every month informally to discuss what's happening in our lives, in our fields, and support each other, share resources, and to hear from resource people. There's a COO network, and a development leader network is fast approaching us. So I might be the CEO of an association. You might be the CEO of a health service or, you know, housing organization. There's a lot that we have in common in the role for what's required of us or the challenges we're facing that is not connected to mission. It's
right.
just about administration,
right.
efficiencies,
yes.
and success behind the curtain. So those position mates, those networks have really grown and flourished, and we're looking forward to doing more of that work.
So, if you take it outside of just the position mm-hmm. alignment, mm-hmm. are you finding that people are looking for or trying to do also some mission alignment stuff potentially, or is it really just enough for them to be keeping their head above water in the positions that they're in?
No, I think there is alignment within mission and across organizations. More and more organizations are creating a continuum to serve mm-hmm. the whole individual through every stage of their life. So from the after-school training program to the workforce training program, to ultimately employment and support to sustain that employment. So it's different organizations that are coming together and realizing that where one drops off, the other picks up, and
right.
moving people through that continuum of support to okay. ensure they get to adulthood.
Adulthood.
Successfully.
Okay. So good. So that's and if that is a the way going forward, are you finding that government is also thinking in that way, because you work very closely with government organizations? Mm-hmm. We had Carrie-Anne Peart here from Prince George's County
sure.
talking a lot about her work, and it crosses health and education. Are you finding that?
Yeah, I am finding that cross sectors, government included, there's a spirit of collaboration in service to people and communities. So yes, I do see that government is thinking along those same lines. I see agencies working together in the district and across Prince George's, Montgomery, and all of Virginia, which the center supports. So that spirit is good, and it's gotten better. And I think on the nonprofit side, because so many of our organizations are strong and high performing, there is not the concern around collaboration that we once heard, which is
right.
a competitive concern.
Oh, I see.
You know,
yeah.
if I work with you or partner with you, you're going to get my secret sauce, and then you're going to go get all the grant.
Or maybe my
funding.
Money, right.
That's
exactly.
right.
Yeah.
So what we have continued to share and is now coming to fruition, if you're strong, you're strong. If you've got it in order, it's in order. No one can take anything,
that.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So solid agreements, expectations that are measured and reasonable, written and documented are some of the ways that we've seen this whole notion of collaboration and a continuum of services through partnership come forward.
Good stuff, good stuff. Well, we've talked about a bunch of different things. The voice you've been hearing is that of Glenn Ogilvie, the CEO of the Center for Nonprofit Advancement here in Washington, D.C., an umbrella organization serving, how many organizations is it?
So we have about 823.
Nonprofits
not that I'm counting.
In District of Maryland and Virginia.
Small, medium, and large.
It's a ton of organizations serving communities around this area. And, I appreciate you sort of taking us back to the beginning of things for you and this whole notion of being your authentic self and taking the lessons from where you went to school mm-hmm. and bringing those even up to your current day, and how this authenticity piece and the connectivity that you have not only with your mission and work, but also with people is what drives how you mentor, coach, and even sponsor mm-hmm. folks, and then how to get into those relationships with people, the trolling and the professional pestering tips that you provided. And then last of all, this notion of the need to ensure that the solutions that we come up with are partner-oriented and scalable so that they can actually meet the goals that we're setting out to fulfill for the people that we're serving. And, I think this one thing that underpins this whole junctional thinking notion is that we are of service. Mm-hmm. In order to be of better service, we have to be functional in these spaces, and all these spaces intersect to some extent. This is not about just health or just housing or just economic development or just education. It's about where those things all come together. So thanks again for your time
today.
Sure.
This has been great.
I appreciate you being available to come and join me for the first show of the new year. It's
a great
way to kick it off. And we're looking forward to the LGW 10 reunion stuff that will mm-hmm. be happening mm-hmm. throughout this year. And challenge those of you out there who are in these various spaces to sort of think about the things we're talking about, not just as things for people who are coming into the space to figure out and think about, but for us to really put back into our own pots, to use another cooking metaphor, right. And sort of as we cook up what we're cooking up for the new year and the new decade. So thanks again, Glenn, and thank you all for listening. You've been listening to the Junctional Thinking Podcast, broadcasting live from the Lion Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Pierre Vigilance, and we will see you next time.
Great work. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening.